Welcome to Becoming Parents Podcast. I'm your host, Jennifer Campbell. I'm a doula in Washoe County, Nevada, a Medicaid provider, a lactation educator, childbirth educator, and mom of 18. You can find me and connect on doulainreno.com. Remember, give a shout out to those who are brave enough to share their stories with us on how they have become parents. Let's dive in. Welcome to Becoming Parents. I'm the host, Jennifer Campbell, and today I'm here with Kevo, and I am stoked about this interview. How are you?
I'm great. How you doing?
I'm great. You're in Houston, Texas.
Yes, I am.
Yep. Go ahead.
No, I was saying I'm a Texas baby. I travel a lot, but I'm a Texas guy.
I lived in Abilene. Not my favorite.
Yeah.
Not my it's favorite. It's hot here. It is hot there. Jump in and tell us your story about becoming a parent wherever you want.
Yeah, it's a pretty long journey, but it's connected to my past, so I'll add a little bit of that to it. So I grew up without my parents, actually. There's currently a documentary being done on my life as well, but I grew up without my parents. And to make that short and simple, my mother and father were in separate relationships, and they had me out of an affair, and they chose to give me up. And then my grandmother and my aunt chose to take care of me. So I was still raised by my mother's side of the family, but I didn't know my mom. I didn't meet my mom until I was an early teenager. And my dad, I met him around the same time, but I saw them about four times during my childhood.
Wow.
So I grew up from Houston. We weren't raised in, obviously I wasn't in like a nice area. So I grew up a product of my environment, in the streets, selling drugs, the typical things people did in that area. And by the time I finished high school, I ended up going to jail, being charged but not convicted for aggravated robbery. And I had spent 9 months in jail. And when I finally beat the case, they dropped the charges to assault. And when I got out, you know, still in the same environment, I ended up being shot. And I was in the hospital for a while. And within those months of me getting out of jail and being shot, I just decided to like have a complete makeover of my life. And that meant, you know, changing the people I was around, changing what I read, how I read, how I ate, how I thought, how I talked, how I lived, how I treated people, how I demanded to be treated. And my life just changed drastically over those years. I was still doing a lot. I was still in the streets, but it was a gradual change of, you know, me trying to get out of the streets. That's the best way to put it. You know, I did have a very successful time afterwards as a tattoo artist. I ended up going to college, getting my bachelor's and my master's in art related fields. And now I actually teach in colleges. I teach art and art history. I did mention that before we spoke that I'm a single dad.
Yeah.
But I'm single because I'm a widower. What happened? Yes, I married my daughter's mom. We have two kids. I married their mom. The day after we got married in the courthouse, like the day immediately after, she wasn't feeling well. We went to the hospital, and they said she had stage 4 leukemia, and she didn't even know it. So she wasn't feeling well up to those days. We were about to travel. So she didn't even know she was literally about to die. And she passed. That was this year in February, of the same type of cancer that my mother had, because my mom died 2 years ago. And you know, since then I've had, obviously that's a drastic change to your life, but since then I had another moment mentally to want to change myself again. Or I don't want to say change, but to alter and better myself as well as a father. So I'm in another one of those paths that I mentioned about at the time where I really was in a dark space, and I decided that things were going to be different. It's not easy, but I wouldn't call it hard being a single parent, but it's definitely awkward as a man.
Okay.
I didn't think that I would be so nervous if I would I'm more conscious of how nervous I am with women now. Like it's
Okay.
so awkward. It's like I don't want to be too close to one anymore. It's so weird. But that's pretty much where
Great.
things are now. And I know I gave you a lot to talk about, so we can go in and out of questions around that.
I want to go back to you getting shot and how that happened. I think it's so amazing. Wait, I want to. I don't know if this ties in. I know you said they're doing a documentary on you and your family and your story, because your story is really incredible. There's
Absolutely.
a.
Whatever you ask me is fine. I can answer anything. I'm not bound to any contract to where I can't interview or
Okay.
anything like that.
Okay. So there's a Kevo Day in Houston,
There is.
April 6th. So
That's my birthday.
Oh, okay. Well, happy birthday. I don't know how all of that ties in, but I'd love for you to go back. Like, what was it like meeting your parents as a teenager and then losing your mom? Did you know a lot about your parents because you were raised at least
Well,
by your
no,
mom's
I
side?
didn't. I didn't know much about them. I got closer to my mom w before she passed, and that was just the, and by close, I just mean we had a few phone calls. We had a few phone conversations, but we don't have a real relationship. I don't have a actual relationship with them. I know my father. My daughter goes to my father's house all the time now. After my wife passed, I got a lot closer to my father's side of family because he I have sisters as well. And so to ask me what it's like meeting them, it wasn't anything. It was just they weren't a part of my everyday life. So for them it may have been a big deal, but for me it was just another day. It was like, okay, I'm
Okay.
meeting y'all, but I may not see you again for who knows. I'm still a kid, you know what I mean? I was so
Yeah.
young back then. In terms of having my own day, so with me doing being a playwright and doing theater, I got a lot of buzz in Houston by different reps and stuff like that, state reps and media people, that my story started to circulate, and it fell in the hands of someone who said they're gonna try to get me my own day, someone in a media personality, and I was like, cool, Didn't think anything of it. And then randomly I got an email from forgot what it's called, but you get it from the mayor's office. And I can't call it random because it was on my birthday. So I was like, oh, this is a good birthday present. So I'm like, they had to plan this, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And and they gave me my own day based on things that I did in the community, based on me, my story being so inspirational and rare. And they call it a testament or proof that it's not where you come from, it's about what you do, the decisions you make. And I felt like that was a very big deal because I live with those type of thoughts in my head. And I'm an extremely serious worker. And it was one of those things that it happened so fast that I'm like, I felt like I deserved it as well. But it was like, it was the truth. It was, you deserve this because you are proof of blank, 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 and this could happen. And this is what Houston represents. This was what Houston would like to represent.
That is amazing. Tell me a little bit more about jail time, getting shot, and making so many, you were making a lot of changes in your life at that point. Take me through that process.
It's hard to go back. I've accomplished so much that I understand how interesting it is, being who I am, being shot and going to jail. But I've accomplished so much. Some of that has become a blur because of the change that I had to make. The changes that I had to make were so hard. And when I use the word hard, I'm talking about hard as in they took a lot of work. A lot of the change that I had to make to get out of that position required me to not forget the things I did, but to change out of the mentality. So it's hard to go back to that mentality and think about being shot, but it's very simple. I was in shootouts all the time. Like I was literally a well-known drug dealer. It's not a secret. It's not like people know this. from when I was younger. Like, it just, it was a thing. So people, I would always get in shootouts, but on that particular night, it was actually a fight going on, and people that were there were not, they were afraid to fight. And they saw me, and they, someone of them whispered my name, and they just start shooting at me. But I covered up, I covered around one of the girls I knew, and just, we just ran, and I got hit. But it was one of those things to where after that, I just kept a gun on me. It was just, I'm not trying to make this sound like insane, but it was just another day. Like, like when I was younger, it was just another day. And, you know, it was a big deal to the people around me and stuff like that because of my reputation. But after a while, it was like, you know, that's kind of what happens to people who did what I was doing. That,
yeah,
it was kind of normal. Like, that's what happens when you're in the streets, when you're that guy, when things like that happen. And jail was in and out just for a few petty stuff and mostly drugs or guns, but the longest time was because of the aggravated robbery charge, which was dropped to assault. I had a lot of, I used to fight a lot back then and always had weapons on me. That's why the charge was aggravated.
Okay.
And there was no proof I had ever physically robbed somebody. So they dropped the charges to just, which is crazy because I always think about this, that if I would have been convicted, like imagine like who I am now, that would have never happened. So I'm a big, big advocate of prison reform because, you know, some people are capable of so much good and that one day can ruin their life. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like if I would have been convicted back then, I wouldn't be able to teach in college right now. I'm literally the only person I've ever heard of in the world. To my knowledge, I don't know one that exists that teaches tattooing at college universities. You know, had I been convicted, that wouldn't that would have never happened. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. It sounds so, like your life sounds so crazy. I'm glad that you made a decision to change. When did you meet your wife?
I met her, I believe it was 2011 or 2012. We just started dating off and on. And at that time I was just dating a bunch of girls and we were just off and on for a while. We'll break up. We get back together. And it was recently, it was last year that we actually decided to get back together. She wanted, we discussed me retiring from tattooing. I'm not going to be tattooing anymore. And we discussed that. And that I should just move forward as a filmmaker because with tattooing, you know, it was a part-time thing with me teaching and painting. And I had hit, I felt like an area to where I couldn't be more successful. I had won enough awards. I had opened enough shops. And artistically, it's not a challenge for me anymore. You know, so as an artist, when I moved to making films, it became, I became more fulfilled with being able to accomplish things that I could not do or that were a boatload of work that required me to maximize my creativity to a point to where I was barely doing film, like 10% of my work life. Mm. And I will still win awards. I will still win contests. So, you know, her thoughts were, if you can do this with a little bit of your time, what's the version of you that goes all in? You know, what's the version of you that just doesn't tat, you know, just gets rid of that? You know, you can make enough money filming. Your plays will do well. It's helping you brand yourself as a playwright. And, you know, after her passing, I did lose a lot of passion to tattoo because of that echo, you know. So now, I'm retiring this summer from tattooing, and I'm going to pursue film and theater more of a full-time thing to see, you know, what I'm really capable of.
That's amazing. So you guys met, eventually you got rid of the other women you were dating, and tell me about having
eventually.
I mean,
eventually.
It took a while.
We had some ups and downs. It's all good.
It's all good.
Yeah. You know, the funny thing about relationships is like when you say that, it's like, you know, I don't want people to get to get like, you know, I'm in a very, I'm a happy person, but I'm in a very depressive state right now. Like I'm mentally, I'm not okay. Like I can honestly say that. But the thing that I am happy about is my wife, when she passed, she was happy. She was not like, we weren't on bad terms. We were newlyweds, you know, even though it was just one day, we got married, and then the next day she was in the hospital. She was completely happy. She had her family. She had a kid that she wanted. She wanted another kid. She had the ring. I paid cash for it. So I had to finance it. You know what I mean? And she was a happy person, you know? So at least I don't have to live with any regrets. You know what I'm saying? Like relationship wise. So that is one thing that other than my kids, like I can honestly, you know, it's easier to move forward and accept these things like death when those happen, but still you're going to have like things that do bother you.
My husband and I have been together for 10 years and he had 4 kids and his wife had died. And so I'm the relationship after the widower.
Wow. I wonder how that is, because I was like,
we could talk a lot
it's
about
tough for
that.
Me to like, yeah, like, but it's like when, like, I'm not a person, like, I don't really just, it's hard for me to like somebody, but it's weird because like, if I do, like now, it would be, I have such a nervous energy towards liking somebody. So I wonder how that worked that for him. Like that was, it's awkward.
I think it was.
But I mean, you have to move forward though.
And he did, and he had a great attitude about it and about the relationship. He didn't like immortalize her. Everything was great and it was wonderful. Like there were good things about the relationship and tough things about the relationship, and he couldn't stop the fact that she died. You can't bring that person
back.
Yeah.
You can't change that. Yeah. So I move forward. It's just awkward.
We both had kids and were divorced. So in that sense, we'd been through some of the same stuff. But he said that dating was hard because when people would find out that his wife died, they didn't want to date him. And I think it's because other women feel like those are really hard shoes to fill, especially when kids are involved. And so there's already a difference in just the dating energy. But, you know, it was fine.
I can see
but
that.
But
I can
understand
see that.
Where you're at. Yeah. Because
yeah,
I went through it with him.
Yeah, I can see that.
He had dated
but
a
I'm
few
not like
people, but he had not been in a relationship. It was very different with me for him.
Yeah, I think I'm just going to date people I don't like, to be honest with you. It's a lot more easier because you don't have to really care about them. Like, you don't have to really, like, care about
just
their
practice.
Feelings and stuff. It'll be a lot easier.
Okay, so let's talk about, you have 2 daughters, because your TikTok is great. I went on your TikTok and stalk. I mean, I stalk everybody, you know, but I stalked you on TikTok. You do great videos about being a single dad. You have 2 daughters?
Yeah, I have 2 daughters. Yeah,
and they're really,
you know what?
Really
I don't
good.
Post enough. I'm going to post more now.
You should,
because I have more free time now. But I'm a writer, so I'm writing long hours. You know what I mean? So it's like I'm definitely posting more. I'm not going to say I'm going to post more. It's already in the bag. It's already coming. I just got to do it.
Yeah,
my daughter's texting me right now. Hold on.
Okay,
what she wants. No, she just asked me, could she drink decaf coffee?
What is the matter with her?
I said no.
These are
she
real
10.
Life
I
moments.
Said
no. No, absolutely not. Talk to me in another 7 or 8 years. So what's it like being a dad? Pretty little. Your kids are separated quite a bit.
10,
tell me,
yeah,
girl
10,
dad.
Yeah, 10 year separation. I have a 10-year-old and a 1-year-old. The 10-year-old turns 11 in November, so she's about to be 11 soon, which is crazy because we have a big year. We have a really big year. I have two more stage plays coming out this year. So yeah, but about being a girl dad, it's like, to be honest, it's like that's the. So mentally, when I say I'm not there, they are what make it easier, because you have to take care of your children. Like you just have to, you know what I mean? Especially coming from a person with no parents. Like I know how it feels to not have your parents. So I can relate that with them with not having a mom. So I got to make sure that I'm actively and emotionally and physically there. You know yeah. what I mean? And I'm their number one support system, because without me, like, you know, it just, things just fall apart. But they are well taken care of. It's fun. It's the older one is more like me. She's more into the arts. She loves to act and dance and all of that. She's very, very extrovert. And a young one, she actually does like the dance, but she seems more of an introvert. And she seems like a little bit more like her mom. And yeah, it's one of them things to where I feel like I haven't gotten any grace, to be honest with you, but okay. I got a lot of respect. The number one comment I got back was when I was becoming a single parent was, well, if anybody could do it, you can. And I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, thanks out loud. But in my head, I'm like, damn, like, this is what y'all think of me. Like, you know, I'm just this super strong individual. So expectations, are extremely high. So people believe in me. And, you know, it definitely gives me a lot more respect for single mothers that I've witnessed over the years that I've seen. It puts a lot of perspective into their lives, because, you know, you think you know, but you really don't know until you're doing it by yourself.
Yeah, no kidding. Tell me advice you'd give other single dads. What are some things that, what were the hardest parts? Like, I can't even imagine, like, showing up to park day and stuff. You're like, you're the single dad awkwardly with a bunch of moms.
Well, I'm a big kid. I'm a big kid.
Okay,
okay. I'm a big kid. So I was already, me and my late wife were already really active in everything school-wise with my daughter. Okay. So we were the parents that the school reaches out to. So I did all the outdoor stuff. Playing mm-hmm. with kids, stuff like that, I would be the guy. I'll be that one parent out there. There's videos of me in Black Panther, Spider-Man outfits, Batman, all kind of stuff, just running around playing with kids. So I'm that type of guy. The hard part is the mother's job. Mm-hmm. I'm not a mom, you know what I mean? So I don't have the nurturing genetics to understand what my daughter's actually saying sometimes, or I don't have the energy to understand, like, hey, it's bedtime, and how important that is to their mental health and stuff. You know what I mean? To me, it doesn't matter how many times I try, I still don't care. You can go to sleep when you want. You know what I mean? So it's little things about that women just do naturally and maternally that I have to work way harder on, because it's just not a natural thing for me. So the advice I would give dads is to do what I did, is just to get help. If you're financially, they may not be in my position in terms of just different investments and me having multiple sources of income. It's like, so they may not be able to do that, but there is a lot of family members, especially women in our family, that have been more than willing to help me. I don't go out. I don't party. I don't do anything like that. I'm one of those people who, I'm an artist, so I need to be working, you know? So fortunately for me, I don't have a nightlife. So we do get our time at night in the mornings, but throughout the day, a lot of times they're at my dad's wife, they're at my aunt's, they're with my late wife's, her friends will come get them, you know. So my cousin spends a lot of time with them. And if you don't have anybody, you know, I can't speak for that. You know, I'm just saying that's what will help me. And you'll be surprised who is actually willing to help, you know, because like I told you, I didn't have a relationship with my dad like that and his wife. You know, they spend more time with them than they ever have while she was alive. That's insane to me. Like, I would never even think they would even be at their house, because we didn't have that type of bond. And, you know, so in a way, her death reconciled and helped a lot of emotional bonds become attached. And also her family as well has been big. Like, they're definitely willing to get the kids some weekends. They're begging sometimes for the kids. And it's like, you know, the help is there when you don't think it's there. That's what I can say. Because I envisioned a life, immediately I envisioned that I would have no help. So that was having so much is a huge help. You know what I mean?
Yep. I do. And you sometimes you have to ask people, especially when death is involved, people don't know what to say or do. And I think they really want to, but they sometimes don't know how to have a conversation, how to jump in and help. And so asking, I think, is very important. Really important. That's great that you have such a support. What about running your own businesses? Because like you said, you have multiple streams of income. You're doing a lot. One of your TikToks, you were like, the kids are asleep in the back of the car. I'm going to be working all night. You know,
because I was working on, I'm working on a script. So a lot of times when I have a script, I will write it and it will be the final draft. And then I will completely change it. You know, so I'm working on a script right now. I have a play, a Christmas play. And I keep rewriting it, even though it's done. I have the final draft just in case I revert back to it. But I'm working on rewrites because I want to see if I find something else. And you know, in terms of being a writer is also being a writer is tough. But all of my work is intermingled as an artist. So outside of tattooing, it's more of a service job. So I'm trading like my time for dollars a lot. So it's not very tattooing is not very lucrative in terms of time, you know, unless you're like a shop owner and then you have people working for you, then it's like, it's that, then the time is more valuable. But as a service, it kind of puts me in a position where if something's happening to my kid, I can't just stop tattooing. You know what I mean? I got to finish the tattoo and then go. So if I'm painting my paintings, I could put my paintings on a t-shirt. I could sell 10 t-shirts. And that's, you know, $300. You know what I mean? I can, you know what I mean? I can sell 100. That's 3,000. You know what I mean? And so they're like intertwined, and like all of the art stuff I do. So, which is why it's a big deal for me when I'm in terms of branding and in terms of theater, that I maintain these relationships with the theaters, because they have to be all on the same page in order to get. When I have a plan for something to be produced, for it to fall through and be monetarily make sense, because there's usually in production, you're not making money. You're just losing money. You know what I mean? They have to understand that my goal is to make the best art possible. And then I get to make the money. You know what I mean? So let me get this down and then I get to make the money. So, which is why I really, 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 really want to be in film, because it's like, I understand production so much that I get that, you know, a lot of this stuff has to be greenlit, and then, you know, some of these people don't have the funds to do these things, and it costs all this money to do stuff. But then once the product is done, you know, your main asset is the product, is the actual product. Yeah. Now you can really make the money.
That's amazing. And you mentioned in the beginning that you are the only person that you know of who teaches tattoo artists in college. Yeah. What's that been like for you? Because usually I thought people did apprenticeships, like I'm good in art.
Yeah,
and
so
a tattoo.
Yeah, that's usually what happens. But I'm under the impression, like, I feel like that the curriculum for colleges, I don't want to call them outdated because they aren't. It's just that the curriculum is based on what we call an atelier art style. It's a lot of classical teaching, and we live in a very digital age. We live in a very instant gratification era. So with me, from low light, kind of stem from people doing it at home or people doing it in prison, and then they're teaching you how to do it. Then they're teaching you how to do it. It never was a system to that was more professional, right? So even apprenticeship systems, it's like you come to my shop, you clean it up, you pay me, I teach you how to tat, and then you work here for a couple of years, and then you'll get better with experience. So I developed my own curriculum with a system of teaching people to tattoo on fake skin, but I do it with I combine the atelier classical drawing style. So what I'm doing is I'm just teaching 2D design, but I'm teaching it how to design a tattoo. So the difference in fine arts is always medium based. It's the medium. So your medium may be a pencil, it may be a pen, it may be a marker, it may be a paintbrush, it may be a watercolor brush, it may be clay, pottery, whatever the tool is. All I'm doing is replacing the pencil with a tattoo machine. You know, simply put, you know what I'm saying? So, and I'm replacing the paper with fake skin. So I'm teaching a class with different tools, but I'm teaching them the same components that we have to learn in order to understand 2D design and drawings, to understand light composition, and just to understand shadows and all of these things, form, value. I'm just teaching it through tattooing because I feel like career-wise, it's much easier to make even have a hobby, a side gig. Tattooing is much easier to make money than to make money drawing and painting, like instantly, because we live in an instant era. Now, for me, I can spend a couple months on a painting because I have people that will pay me $10,000, $15,000 for a painting. I have people like that, but I can't. I have people that will pay me $1,200. You know what I mean? If I, you know, that's something that'll take a week. But this isn't. Everybody doesn't just start out with it. You know what I mean? So I feel like tattooing is a good segue to how can I make some money right now? You know what I mean? So my classes are usually packed because a lot of people, young people, are interested in tattooing.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. I've told some of my kids to go into it, mostly because I want to get a sleeve for less money. But let's end. Yeah. Let's wrap this up and end. I know you gave advice on getting help. Is there any other piece of advice? It could be business-wise, because you, or changing your lifestyle. You said you had to change the way you talk, like everything about you. You can give a piece of advice for parenting, entrepreneurship, making the changes that you need to make. What do you want to?
Well, I'll make it. I'll say the advice that comes to mind is immediately with what you said is I've been thinking about this lately. Like I've been thinking about this a lot, and I can't pinpoint it. I can't really. It's a very huge gap of work ethic that that people have who are really really good at stuff versus people who are just good at it or just average at it. And I'm really amazed what did it, to be honest, what brought the first little seed that brought this thought was Beyonce's new country album. And I listened to the album. I read some articles. I read both negative and positive reviews. And I just kept thinking, like, what makes a woman or a person who has anything that you can think of materialistically, what makes them say, I want to try something new? You know what I mean? And I've been thinking about that a lot. Like, what is it in these people who, LeBron James, this is a billionaire. Floyd Mayweather was making so much money. Why does he love fighting so much? You know, why does she love music so much? And what I'm trying to come up with is, like, what is this thing about the passion of what you do or what you love? Why does that separate you from such a huge gap from others? And like I said, it's not an advice. It's just something I'm really, really thinking about. And I will say, if people do have that thing, that I really believe that is my coping mechanism. Like for me, it's art. But I don't think just, you know, I'm not trying to say people are all just sad and depressed, but I feel like everybody's coping with somehow. So I feel like if you can find that in yourself, find yourself to something that you actually can passionately, where it doesn't even matter how much money it's going to cost, that you should go crazy over it. And again, it's not just sound advice. It's also like, I just can't stop thinking about that.
That is amazing. That's a perfect way to end. Kevo, thank you so much for being on. I love your story. I appreciate your honesty.
I appreciate you as well.